This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. I'm your HeartWise host, Charles Mills. Our guest today spent her teenage years living on the streets of Los Angeles. Anyone who thinks that's romantic or exciting needs to reevaluate that concept. Living on the streets is anything but. However, as you'll soon discover, God isn't deterred by streets or the people who call them home. Sometimes, when we're at our worst, God does His best work. Cherie Peters has taken her street smarts and reshaped them into a Christian ministry. Cherie, welcome to HeartWise.
Thank you. I love that introduction, Charles, because what's really interesting to me is right now today there are about 80,000 kids on the streets of LA.
Oh my.
So when I ended up on the streets, I jumped onto the streets expecting something that I didn't see. Literally, kids are picked up within 24 hours. They are funneled into industries. The biggest industry is the sex trade industry, which is $32 billion industry. And they are used and abused in ways that you can't even imagine. And to survive the streets or to romanticize that is so wrong. So I love what you say. There's nothing romantic about it. There's nothing about it that is good. Even for people that are used to that, usually they just stuff themselves with drugs or alcohol in order to survive.
Now, this is something that you have brought out in your life and in your talks. You say that drugs and alcohol became a way for you to escape the escape. You had escaped to the streets. And tell us a little bit about why you ended up there and what you did to try to deal with the fact that you ended up there.
My dad eventually died in a crack house, strung out on drugs. When my parents were young, they were in high school when they started having kids. And so I was a second child. My dad was already drinking. My mom was already trying to escape into whatever because she's in an abusive relationship. She was a child, and she was having one child after another. So my mom escaped into prescription drugs and books and whatever, and my dad escaped into sexual acting out and alcoholism. So growing up in that, I was abused by my mom's neglect. Actually, what she said is that I just hated you. You ruined my life, and I hated you. And so I got that really clearly, and then I was molested from the time I was 3 months old by my dad. And my mom had five kids before she was in her 20s, so we had all of these kids, all of this chaos, and literally survival in that house was just that day in and day out from the time I could walk or the time I could remember. And so when I tried drugs for the first time, I was 12 years old, and I took a drug, and minutes later, I didn't want to kill myself. And I thought, wow. So my solution to everything, all of the abuse, my first suicide attempt was I was 8 years old trying to jump off the house. I mean, all of that kind of sadness and all of that chaos and all of that abuse, I could take one drug and it's all gone. I mean, I still get abused, but I don't care anymore. And so to me, drugs were my solution.
So they really were a cover-up for what was happening to you. So I can understand why you would want them. Wasn't there any alternative, Cherie? Wasn't there any program you could go to, anybody you could talk to, a pastor, anybody in your life that you could go to at that time in your life?
I think in most crazy households, everybody, like even as a kid, I absolutely, for my mom especially, loved her. I mean, I don't think that there was a day in her life where she returned that back to me, but I protected her with everything in me. And I blamed everyone else. If it wasn't for my dad, she would love me. If it wasn't for my older sister, she would love me. If it wasn't that something was desperately wrong with me, she would love me. So I really, I spent my whole childhood trying to protect and get her to see me. So I wouldn't have told anyone. We didn't have church in our life. We didn't have pastors in our life. We were the drug family. So even our next door neighbors or the people on our fairly normal neighborhood wouldn't really let their kids play with us because we were the drug use kids. I wouldn't dare to dream about even having anything normal in my life because I just didn't feel like life was ever going to give me that. And that just got worse and worse as I got older. I was pregnant. I delivered twins when I was 13.
Oh.
And I ended up on the streets right after that. So, you know, to me, there was nothing in my mindset that said that life was ever going to work out for me.
You know, as I hear you talk and as I've heard you talk about these things before, it just seems incomprehensible that someone would live that way. Are you saying that this is more common than we think it is?
Oh, unbelievable. In the ministry I have today, I work with kids like me every day. Mm. And to get through that mindset with them, to get them just for a second, explore the reality that there is a God that can restore all of this and give you a life where you can laugh out loud in your own skin and you can figure out, you know, what kind of giftings you have and what you're passionate about. If I can break through and get that one thing just for a second, a life has changed. Mm-hmm. But man, I see the kids all over the world. I went to Kenya. I worked with kids that were mutilated. I went to Thailand to work with kids in the sex trade industry. I've been all over Russia working with kids from addicted families. I just got back from Australia. So, I mean, it's not just here in the U.S. in major cities or even small cities. It is everywhere. For me, my goal in anything is if I can get lay people within the congregation of the denomination I belong to just to stand up and be part of the solution, that it would be a dream come true for me. Because we're 18 million strong.
Yeah, yeah. You're talking about the Seventh-day Adventist Church, right?
The Seventh-day Adventist. Because I just want to say that as soon as people see that it's all around us, and we do really have the answer, I think that we would really change the world. And that's my goal is you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this is something that all Christians tend to either gloss over or simply ignore, is that we do have the answer. In our knowledge, in our experience, in our churches, there is the answer. And that, of course, is a relationship with God. But we tend to think, well, I don't want to be a pest. I don't want to bother that person over there. I don't want to be the preacher, the person that comes in, the Bible-thumping person that comes in to these people's lives and tries to make a difference, because they're gonna despise me, they're gonna hate me. Is that true?
What's really interesting to me, 10 years on the street, so I mean, I got kidnapped by motorcycle gangs because I was a cute kid.
Yeah.
I was picked up and abused and all that kind of stuff. I watched a 13-year-old girl get murdered during initiation for new members in a motorcycle club. And I just took more drugs. To survive it, I just took more drugs. When I'm 23, a guy puts a gun to my face and a drug deal has gone bad and he said he's going to blow my head off, mm-hmm. right? And I remember thinking, thank you so much, because I'm done. You know, it was the first time I actually felt hopeful, I felt joy, and I just braced myself for the next minute that he would actually just be successful and kill me. I've tried over and over and it hasn't worked. He was just trying to scare me, and I wanted to scream at the top of my lungs, my next breath scares me, please pull the trigger. And he walked out, and I had to take my next breath, and it was really just a crazy, crazy moment. But what happened next is I went back home, and I don't know why. I thought maybe I'd go back home, and my mom would say, you know, what was I thinking? I love you, and I'm sorry you left. But it was just the same. I walked back home, and the house was filthy, and everybody was kind of in their own thing. And mom did say she went back to school. And I asked her, because I was so proud of her. I knew that she was married to my dad, who was horribly abusive, domestic violence and sexual sin and all that kind of stuff. Then he left when I was four, and she moved my stepfather in, who was alcoholic. And so I knew her background. And I thought, what are you taking in school? Because I'm just so proud of you. And she said, social work.
Oh, no.
And I wanted to tell her, you don't even like kids. I don't want to break the news to you, but I don't think you'd be that good of a social worker. Look at your family. But I didn't, because, you know, those days you just didn't talk down to your parents or bad about your parents. So I tried to get out the door as fast as I could, because I thought the only thing I wanted to do was stab her like 300 times. Yeah. You know, all of those huge crimes that you read about, they totally made sense to me that moment. I said, you know, I got to go. And she said, I have something for you. And she gave me an autobiography that she wrote in her social work program. And I had no intentions of reading it. I was going to go back to the drug house I lived in, kill myself, and I would be done. But when I got back there, I felt really impressed by God. For some reason, this is the weirdest thing for me, is I knew it was God, even though I didn't have a God history. Hmm. I just had this moment where I felt safe and loved. Mm-hmm. And what was really crazy to me is knowing that it was God. I felt impressed by the Holy Spirit to read this paper. My mom had gotten an A in her autobiography. She had written about her life, her own molest. She was given up by her alcoholic mom when she was five, and the way her life went and all that kind of stuff. And when she met my dad and when she met my stepdad and when she had me. And I turned the page, the second page, to get to the third page, and it said, I took all of my hatred and anger out on my second child, and I ruined her life. And I couldn't even breathe because I thought for the first time in my life, someone said out loud the truth, because I knew. I'd look in the mirror and wonder what was wrong with me. But I just read that for the first time. I felt like God said it was never about you, and if you want to change your life, I can do that. And I decided to quit drugs and find a place to go, and I ended up at a vegan, vegetarian Seventh-day Adventist house.
Well, we're going to talk more about what happened next at this turning point in your life when God came in. This is an incredible story. It's not a pleasant one, of course, but it's incredible, and we want to hear more. First, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, more with Cherie Peters. We're talking about her life on the streets in Los Angeles and what happened next. And what happens next is glorious. Stay tuned.
I'd like to think that one day, when we get to heaven, we're going to see a list of people. People like Jared and Susan, who were introduced to Jesus because of something we said. Or maybe it was as simple as a passing smile. But these people will look into their past and be able to say, I'm here because of you. Recently, you may have heard that Heartwise Ministries has begun spreading the gospel to the young, the old, the sick, and the healthy. We want to take this type of medical programming to the non-believer and the person who has closed themselves off to traditional forms of outreach. If you believe as we do and want to support Heartwise so that together we can count more names on the Tree of Life, please consider donating today at heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
It's time for a HeartWise Health Break. I'm Charles Mills. Doctors tell us that to keep things moving through our alimentary canal, we need to ingest 20 grams of fiber per day. But some fibrous foods are totally tasteless. Well, tuck that napkin under your chin and grab your trusty spoon, because you can eat your daily quota of fiber and enjoy the process too. One serving of avocado contains 9 grams, 33% more than a cup of shredded wheat cereal. Other tasty high-fiber fruits include raspberries, 8 grams, blackberries, 7 grams, apples, 6 grams, and mangoes, 4 grams. And a serving isn't much, usually half a cup or less. Taste bud-pleasing veggie choices include acorn squash, black beans, artichokes, and sweet potatoes. Include plenty of flavorful, fibrous foods each day and enjoy the great benefits of regularity, lower cholesterol, colon cancer prevention, and staying trim. To learn more about gaining and maintaining optimum health, visit heartwiseministries.org. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Our guest today is Cherie Peters. She is the director of True Step Ministries. Is that correct? True Step Ministries?
Yes.
Okay.
True Step Ministries, nonprofit. We've been around since 1994, and I'm so proud of it.
Absolutely. And True Step Ministries is the result of a lot of bad things. So this is a good thing coming from a bad thing. Cherie had a terrible childhood and a lot of abuse and street life and whatnot and drugs. And there was a turning point in her life. And God came in and said, hey, you know, it wasn't your fault, because she was blaming herself for everything that happened to her. It wasn't your fault. Tell us, Cherie, what happened next?
Charles, I hope this makes sense to someone, but I remember sitting there on a drug bed, just weeping, knowing that I was loved by God, knowing I was loved by anybody was just crazy for me. And I remember feeling the sense of God saying that he loved me. And I thought, look at me. I had teeth missing from being beat by a motorcycle gang. I was illiterate. I was 23 years old, functionally illiterate, and strung out on heroin, living in a drug house. I remember thinking that nobody loves me, and I felt so sure that God loved me. It was just ridiculous. And I know that God gives different people kind of visions. And I saw something vaguely. I can't even say I saw it clearly. I saw something vaguely, and I felt like what God said is, can I show you who I see when I look at you? Mm. And I just wept because I thought, who you see? I'm unloved. I'm pathetic. I'm strung out. I can't hardly read. And he showed me who I was the day after resurrection. And I thought, the day after resurrection, not the day after I pulled a needle out of my arm, but the day after this whole thing is done, I am beloved, I am innocent, and I am a child created in the image of God. And so I just couldn't even hardly breathe. And I thought, if I was even close to that, I will change everything. I will give you everything. And I remember just feeling as I stood up from that room or that bed, is I felt like what God was going to do is not in this lifetime, but he's going to walk me to that day after. And I believe he's been really faithful. I ended up at a Seventh-day Adventist home. A friend of mine who was strung out sexually and came into strip clubs every night had a sister that was Adventist. Mm-hmm. And I said, I needed a place to clean up. And he called her, and she said I could come. And so I end up at her house. And I couldn't believe it, because I walk in. I just asked her for some coffee. She said she didn't have any. Tea, no. Dr. Pepper, Pepsi, caffeine, chocolate, sugar. And I'm going crazy because I didn't bring any drugs with me. I'm withdrawing from everything. And she finally says she has some lentils. And she pulls this pan of really nasty-looking stuff from the stove. And I'm thinking, I don't want that, you know. And then she said, can I give you some water? Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, or saying out loud, I can't stomach the taste of water.
Yes, yes.
And for most alcoholics, we are addicted to the sugar content and alcohol and all of that stuff. And water just doesn't work. And she said, did it take you a while to get used to alcohol? Mm. And I said, yes. And she said, water's like that.
Oh, wow.
You'll just get used to it. And so she gave me healthy things and water and all kinds of stuff. And Charles, you said something at the beginning of the interview that I thought was interesting. Is that you said something about God's love changes us.
Yes, it does. Yes,
I couldn't accept God's love totally at that moment. I had to see it in the face of someone, and I saw it in her face. Mm-hmm. This woman struggled to not judge me. She would go in the bathroom and pray every 20, 25 minutes. She would come out refreshed. I would say something bizarre, and she would be back in the bathroom. You know, she was just totally on her knees. But I think after about a week of that, I remember looking at her one day, and she was crying, and she'd asked me, what's the worst thing you ever did? And I told her about a molest that happened when I was a little girl, and she started crying, and she said, you didn't do that. And I just got it.
Wait. You were saying that you did the molestation, even though you were the one that was molested?
I was there, and I thought it was my fault. Why would someone come in and do that unless I had done something?
Oh, my.
You know, and so what she said is, no, this was not your fault. And for the first time ever, I got it. And I started crying, and she started crying, and we just held each other. But it was that moment that I saw the love of God in a person, and I changed. I mean, I felt healing. It was unbelievable. And I think Christians are very funny, because what she did next, I think she just shook her arm and a Bible slipped out of her sleeve. And she said, now we're doing Bible study.
All right.
But, you know, it's like she led me from that moment of surrender or trust in another human being into the Word of God. And I think I couldn't have got there any other way. Mm-hmm.
Are you saying also, and I think I know the answer to this, are you saying that God is the only way for someone who is on the street, someone who's been abused, someone who's been having this kind of life? Is God the only way out?
You know, the percentages of people that change lifestyles from homelessness to a regular life is very low, a few percentage points, right? And I think that that happens if you grab hold of God.
Okay, all right.
And I have a feeling that, you know, I've seen people try to do it other ways. I've been clean since 1979, so I've been clean for over 35 years.
Yes.
So I really believe I couldn't have done it any other way.
And you've also hit on the secret here, because when God cleans you up, he also gives you the power to stay clean. Am I on the right track?
And to go out and reach someone else. Because God says, now I want you to go tell someone. I want you to show someone else how to do this. I want you to help someone else stand up. And so all of those things are what keeps us clean. And like, I can't just accept this incredible gift of a new life, this incredible gift of health, and go sit on my couch and watch movies. You know what I mean?
Yes.
He does tell me, you know, there are people dying out there. Don't forget them.
My. One of the things that Dr. James Markham, who's the founder director of Heartwise Ministries, tells us over and over again is that we are all healers. And I think you'd agree with that, wouldn't you?
I would. I would in a second.
Okay. True Step Ministries. Tell us about that ministry and how people can learn more about it.
True Step Ministries is an international organization that works with at-risk folks, because everybody needs that moment where they see themselves the day after resurrection. They see themselves through the eyes of God. We started working with at-risk kids, at-risk teens, and then we realized that there's at-risk folks right in the very congregations that I was worshiping in. And so God just says, if I send them, work with them. And so it's a matter of looking at, does the blood of Christ actually give us freedom? And with that freedom, what do we do with it? So I really believe that I was drawn to, like, I got clean, went back to school, got a nursing degree, did 15 years of psych nursing, and then left that to start True Step Ministries so that I could bring the spirituality in with someone's healing. Talk about God freely. And so we started the ministry with that. We have a television show called Celebrating Life and Recovery on Three Angels Broadcasting. We have a radio show called Celebrating Life with Sheree and Friends. On our website, we have all kinds of stuff on TrueStep.org as far as to help families to heal, to help individuals to heal, and to help people go into leadership to run friendship recovery groups in house or in your church so that you can bridge the gap between where someone is at and where they will be at in their spiritual journey.
Sheree, we have 60 seconds left on the program. If you had the opportunity to go back in time and confront the 13-year-old you, as that 13-year-old you is striding confidently toward the streets of Los Angeles, what would you say? You have 45 seconds.
I would just say that always remember that God is crazy about you. And no matter what, find someone that can reaffirm that.
All right. Sheree Peters is the name. TrueStep.org is the website. Listener, I recommend that you go there and check it out. Lots of resources available to you, especially if you know someone or you are someone who is facing this type of life. There is hope for you. Believe me, there is hope. And Sheree is living proof of that. Sheree Peters, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate your words of guidance and wisdom. Thank you, Sheree.
Thank you, Charles.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Sheree Peters, inviting you to remain heartwise. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on Heartwise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. Heartwise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.